This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This particular episode is one that I've been wanting to have for quite some time. We're going to be talking with Simon Lovell over in England, and is someone who continues to interest a lot of people because I can tell by the analytics that show that we have a lot of downloads of some of the episodes that had Simon in those. And so I know people are wanting to know a lot about how he's doing and when he's going to be returning to the U.S. perhaps and going back on the convention scene and other things like that, which he'll be discussing here this week on the podcast. This week there are a lot of things packed into this one podcast, so be sure to stay till the very end, where you will also learn how to sign up for this week's contest, and you could possibly win a free copy of Framework by Tom Frame, offered by H&R Magic Books. But before we get to that, I also not only want to thank Simon for being on this, but I also want to thank a lot of the people who are you out there, friends of the Magic Word, who support the Magic Word. I particularly want to thank a few people who have recently become members and have pledged their financial support. So I want to thank Bruce Lish, Robert Taylor, and Bert Rosenbluth. These are some gentlemen who have supported us by donating to the Magic Word podcast, and their financial support is sincerely appreciated, and they get to join that elite circle. So if you'd like to find out more about that too, please go ahead and click on the tab that's on the magicwordpodcast.com that talks about how to join, or you can just go straight up and you can donate in the top left of the podcast blog. There is a little button where you can donate now, or you can go through Patreon where you can donate also on a regular basis. So, in addition to that, I particularly this week want to thank some people who made this podcast possible. The way this kind of came about, talking with Simon Lovell, was that I first contacted Scott Penrose over in the Magic Circle, who is the president, and asked if he might be able to assist me. And long story short, he was able to connect me with another gentleman, Mr. James Cooper, who in turn was able to connect me with Jack Blackmorne. And again, this is kind of a long story, but I finally got to connect with them when they were having their weekly meeting of the Mid-Essex Magic Society, and we were able to connect by phone going through Skype, the miracle of the internet, and finally been able to connect and actually had a very good connection, and Simon seems to be in a very strong voice and talked a lot about what he has gone through and where he is now on his road to recovery, and I think you'll kind of enjoy hearing this conversation. We begin this podcast by having a brief conversation with Jack Blackmorne, who, as mentioned, was one who helped arrange for this conversation with Simon Lovell here on The Magic Word. Now, which club meeting is at this meeting here tonight?
This is the Mid-Essex Magic Society, so slap bang in the middle of Essex, apparently, is where we guys meet up. It's a little kind of back room, function room of a nice pub. An old English pub. You know, we've got beers on tap and kind of dart boards up and kind of horrible shaggy carpets everywhere.
So, Middlesex, I have not lectured there. I was there, when was it, 2012, I think, and had, or 13, had lectured to about, I think, 9 or 12 different clubs around the southern part of England. But I didn't get to your club. I know that sometimes the clubs will only meet like at certain times and of the month or whatever. And so they said, next time you're going to be over here, then we'll try to arrange for something. So,
oh no, it's once a week here. It's pretty good. It's every Tuesday at this little pub. It's quite nice.
How many people typically will attend your meetings?
It depends. Anywhere, like when we have a lecture, we get some kind of pretty kind of semi big names really that kind of rock up. Quite big names. It's like 40, 50, and then on a kind of normal night like this, it's kind of like 20, 30 kind of sometimes.
Wow, that's a pretty good size group then, because I know there are a lot of clubs throughout England.
There are a few, but this is probably the nicest one, around, so we're pretty friendly here, so it's still good. Simon's here actually right now. He's looking like he's poised and ready to talk to you.
All right, thank you very much, Jack.
I'll hand the phone over to him.
Right.
And then you can do what you need to do, and when someone's finished, you can let me know, and everyone's good.
That sounds great.
Sound good? You guys ready? Like, You happy for me to hand over the phone to him?
Yes, of course. Please do.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, I'll pass him over to you.
Thanks, Jack.
Hello, Mr. Wells.
Hey, Simon. It's a long time no hear, buddy.
I know, and I miss all you guys terribly.
And we do you as well. You know, I've been getting a lot of people who have been saying, have you heard anything from Simon? What's up and how's he doing? And I say, well, I understand he's back and attending some of the magic meetings, so sounds like you're out and about.
Yeah, I even did a lecture at the Magic Circle.
Oh, did you? Fantastic.
Yeah, that's it went good. Really well. Yeah, well. I did a night with Paul Daniels and Debbie the week before he died.
Oh, my. Now, how was he doing, I mean, up until that point? I thought he was trying to pull pretty much closer to himself and not spending much time outside of his immediate family.
He actually seemed to be doing fine, and he was on good form that night. And, you know, he was classically Paul, as I remembered him.
Yeah.
And he did a couple of tricks, and they worked. And I was absolutely shocked to learn that the next week he just died.
So it didn't look like that he was physically ill.
No, he was hiding it. Hmm. Well, obviously he was hiding it very, very well because he must have known.
Right.
But, yeah, and it quite freaked me out when I read it in the papers because I'd literally been with him just a few days before.
So he had hidden that all up to that point until basically a few days before he died.
Exactly. Yeah. It was certainly to me anyway. I'm sure his immediate family probably
sure.
knew, but nobody seemed to know at the Magic Circle, and everyone seemed to be absolutely stunned when he passed. And it was very odd because one of my first magical things was that one of my first connections with television, oddly enough, was when he wanted the Derek Lever's X-ray illusion thing.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what Derek called it, but, you know, it's based on Harbin's X-ray illusion. And I happened to be the only one that had one, and I hired it to him for 50 quid, and I had to drive it down in my little minivan.
Now, how many years ago was that?
Oh, my God. That has to be, 77, probably about 77, 78, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, and we did it. And I still remember the person who vanished in it, oddly enough, was a lady called Marty Kane, which probably won't mean much to your English listeners. Will mean a lot to your American listeners.
Right.
Won't mean much to your American listeners.
Right,
but will mean a lot to your English listeners. Because she was a very famous comedian and singer in England at the time. And it was, you know, a big thrill for me, not only to meet Paul properly, but also to meet her. It was one of those days you remember forever. You know, you're like on an impish high for months afterwards.
What is the effect?
Trekking around the working men's clubs.
What is the effect with the? I'm not familiar with the X-ray illusion. You say it was Harbin's.
Okay. Harbin's. Yeah. You put a girl into a box, and it's all lit up, and she's there standing. And you turn these mysterious dials, or as Eugene Berger might say, these mysterious dials. and she doesn't vanish. She slowly fades away. It was incredibly clever.
Hmm.
So she literally becomes ever so slowly translucent and then fades away. And the box is unmistakably empty. And then you turn the dials again. And she slowly fades back into place.
Hmm.
And it was a very clever use. Am I allowed to give away secrets?
I think
podcast?
So, sure, yeah.
Okay, well, there was a V from the back. I think in Harbin's version, it was semi-plated glass. But in Derek's version, it was like a smoky perspex.
So it's kind of a Pepper's Ghost type of a thing.
Exactly. So when the lights were from behind, you could see them clearly, but when the lights came from the side, mm-hmm. they reflected against the glass, and the person, if you controlled the dials correctly, slowly faded away. And what was quite funny about it was Paul couldn't do it at all. And he was a very talented magician, but this was one thing that completely baffled him. She was either there or she wasn't, and that was why I got employed on the show, because
mm-hmm.
I actually had to work the dials off stage while he did all the hand gestures and things, and it works beautifully.
Wow. Now, that was your first time that you had gotten to meet Paul, you say?
Yeah, I've seen him obviously many times, you know, big fan. Sure. And that's the first time I got to meet him. And we got to be friends. And we didn't meet that often, but every time we met, it was kind of cool. It was like re-meeting for the first time and saying hi and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was great.
Now, at that time in the 70s, had he been appearing on television a lot, or was he still working in the working man's clubs?
He was still doing the working men's clubs, and it was, I think, his second TV series. The first one had been kind of quite a small production, and this was like when they were really going for it, really pushing him.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the second show, I believe, of his second TV series. So it was way early in his career.
Right.
Well, then, actually, not way early, because obviously he'd done the working men's clubs for years, as we all did in those days, and he just got that big break. So it's the second year of his big break.
You know, over here in the U.S., of course, as you know, we don't have the working men's clubs, and so just as explanation,
yeah, but you still have the veterans clubs and things like that. That so many
right
are based around. So, and the reason I say that, Scott, is to equate that to working men's clubs. So, especially in the north of England. And around London, you would have, like, say, a big car company in London. They would have a club for all of their workers to be able to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the north, they would have working men's clubs where all the workers would go after work and have a couple of beers and stuff like that. And it was an absolutely staple diet for entertainers, because you could get with an agency, if you were lucky, and they would book you 7 or 10 nights where you would do 2 or 3 clubs a night.
Wow.
So literally in 10 days, you could do 30 gigs.
Mm-hmm.
And you would get paid fluppence per gig, fluppence being not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But when you added it up over the 10 days, you know, if you got like £25 a gig, that meant you were earning £75 a night. When you add that up over 20 days, so it's like £1,500. And that was when the average wage was probably £75 a week.
That's pretty darn good then.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was driving a Jaguar motor car at the time, so it yeah. shows you it was very darn good.
But as I understand also,
and then, of course, it all collapsed when all the factories closed down and all the clubs closed and everybody had to sell their Jags and were driving around in bicycles.
As I recall also, that was not an easy circuit necessarily, because they would yell at you and throw things, and also they would have like a ham or something that they were raffling off at the end of the evening, and they were just waiting for you to get off the stage so they could possibly win this leg of lamb or something.
Oh, not only that, it gets even worse than that. They would do the raffle right before the headliner came on.
Oh, okay.
So, and they've got like, you know, they'd say, oh, we've only got a couple of prizes. And they'd have like 97,000 prizes, you know, from the ham down to Sylvia's crystallized ant.
Now,
and so, you know, so you were due to go on at 11 and you'd eventually go on at like 1:30 in the morning when nobody gave a crap about you.
Now, in those cases, when they had so many prizes, that would delay the time that you'd actually get on stage. And wouldn't that cause a little problem when you're trying to hurry and get to your next gig?
Yeah, but what you always did was you tried to, if you had a decent agent, they would work out which ones would do what. And normally it worked out. Sometimes it didn't, sometimes it did. But, you know, you just had to, it was a crapshoot in those days. You know, mm-hmm. it was like the wild, wild west of cabaret.
Wow.
You know, there were sometimes, and if your car broke down, you were screwed, you know. And that happened a lot, because we were all driving around in creek mobiles.
I remember going with Terry Seabrook in Watford to his conservative club. Now,
I did that several times.
Now, that is a different kind of a club than the workman's club. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. That was dead. That was what they would call in England dead posh.
Okay.
Yeah, that was quite a swanky club, even though it wasn't really by American standards.
Right.
It certainly wasn't anything like, you know, a Las Vegas gig. But if you got Watford, you thought, oh, at least that's an easy one. You want to talk about the hard ones? Talk about Sunderland Boilermakers Club. That's where you'd walk in, and if you had a decent car and a southern accent, the chances were of survival were 3-1, and I don't mean doing well on stage or not. I mean living or dying. And the chances of your car having four tires when you went out was zero.
Oh, man. A really sketchy part of town.
Oh, yeah, no, I had an XR3i at the time. And that was quite a posh car, a little Escort XR3i. It was like a sporty kind of car. Uh-huh. And it was, you know, it was the yuppie car.
Sure.
And in Manchester, Leeds and Yorkshire, I had it. I think I may hold a world record here. I had it stolen 9 times.
The same car, and you found it? I mean, they said this is a piece of crap and we don't want it, and they just leave it beside the road or what?
It wasn't a piece of crap. It was a bloody good car, but it just kept getting stolen. I even had it stolen. I did a central television show. It was opening up for Wayne Dobson, doing his warm-up. And it was stolen from the central television car park.
Oh, my.
I mean, that's supposed to be a security-guarded car park.
Yeah.
Then gag up.
Mercy, mercy.
We English have that reputation, you know. We were the pirates and buccaneers, don't forget.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
So don't forget to pin back your buccaneers while I'm talking.
Okay. So what were you lecturing about when you were at the Circle?
I was going, it was kind of a retrospective thing. So I was going over tricks I'd done when I was a kid, tricks I'd done when I was a teenager, and then did tricks I did in America that the Americans seemed to like, and then finished off with a couple of new things. And, yeah, it all went rather well. I was quite pleased with it. The thing I was most pleased with was I didn't bugger anything up, so that was okay.
Well, that's a good thing. Well, as I recall, just as you had left, your new book had come out about on cons and cheats that Magic Inc. had put out.
Oh, yeah. How to Cheat at Everything.
Yes.
And then there was the other one, Bar Betcha. Betcha.
Was that? I think that was one, the Betcha, that just had come out just as you left.
Yeah.
Because Sandy Marshall, I'd gotten a copy from him, and you'd just left, so I thought, man, I don't know when I'm going to go see you next to get a signed copy of, have you signed my copy of this. But I read it from cover to cover, lots of really good stuff in there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could make a living from that book without a shadow of a doubt, and quite legally. You know, the How to Cheat at Everything one, I would warn people against trying to make a living from, because 90% of that is completely illegal. But Betcha is just like, I used to say to people all the time, if you want to drink for free, it's easy. Just don't make the bets too big. You know, make, let them, oh, excuse me. You know, let you know, bet them a beer, bet them a shot, bet them a couple of dollars. But the moment a bet goes above that, then you're looking at a bar fight or a confrontation or being barred from your local watering hole and stuff like that. And it's just not worth it on a bar bet. Though that having been said, several people, of course, have made fortunes from bar bets. You know, people like Amarillo Slim and Pug Wilson and people like that. But, yeah, not the smartest call in the world unless you're somebody like Amarillo Slim.
Yeah.
Book I recommend to all magicians, by the way, to read is a wonderful book about the life of Amarillo Slim called Amarillo Slim in a World Full of Fat People. And it's a genuine book.
I've not heard of that one.
Oh, you've got to get it. It's got all of his greatest bets in it.
Well, Titanic Thompson's book, I think, was by John Rockerbomber. It had a lot of really great stories in there, too.
It did, and not to knock John, who's a good buddy, but the Amarillo Slim book is better.
Wow. Okay.
This is a guy that would just be monumentally ridiculous. People, he'd be driving down the road with people, and there'd be a sign saying, San Antonio, 40 miles. And he'd say, it's not 40 miles to San Antonio. I'll bet you it's about 32 miles. And they'd go, are you mad?
Yeah.
And he bet them, and a not inconsiderable amount of money in those days. He would bet them it was between 32 and 34 miles to San Antonio. And they'd drive it, and it would be 33 miles. So why did the road sign say 40 miles? Because Slim had been out the night before and moved the road sign.
He'd gone to that much trouble in order to win a bet that appeared to be impromptu.
He would absolutely do that all the time.
Wow.
But he also did some very dangerous bets, like canoeing down this river that nobody had ever canoed down before and broke legs and God knows how many bones doing it, but he did it.
Mm-hmm.
He also, I'll tell you one last great one, because I know you've got a few more questions, was he once bet a professional golfer, and I can't remember the golfer's name, but it was the top golfer of the day, that he could drive a golf ball further than he could.
Okay.
And the golfer made some quite sensible disclaimers on it. He said, you can't drive it off a cliff. It has to be over flat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can't have a special golf ball. You've got to use the same club as me, all that. And the golfer drove the ball and drove a great drive. I think it was something like in those days, and we're talking back in the 30s here, when the average drive was like 40 feet, I would imagine. But he drove it like 199 yards or something like that. And Slim, having picked his location for his drive, took him out to Chicago down the road. And drove it over the frozen lake. And as Slim liked to say, that ball didn't stop rolling till the spring thaw.
That's a good one. That's a good bet. I always thought of Amarillo Slim as being a poker player. I did not know that he did a lot of bets.
In fact, he was the first winner of the World Poker Championships, 1957 or 56, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And won against Pug Wilson. And won on a bluff. Which shows true balls.
Boy, really, because that was a lot of money, I'm sure, back then.
It's nothing these days when they're winning, like, I don't know, 80 gazillion billion dollars. Which is about 40p English. But in, or euros, or whatever they're using here now, or shekels, actually, probably.
Bitcoins.
That was a bit controversial. It was quite a lot of money. It was certainly in the tens of thousands. And, Amarillo Slim is one of those guys. And I nearly met him, and I didn't, and I was so pissed.
So close, huh? What was your circumstance where you came close to meeting him?
I was very close to where he lived, and he was in, obviously on his last legs at that time. And it just couldn't work out with the schedule. And I was so miffed. I felt like canceling the whole Magic convention thing and just going to meet Amarillo Slim. I thought, I'll do my show and I'll go and see him the next day. And then it was too late.
Yeah, I have learned that you always need to take advantage of whatever opportunity that you have rather than them saying, well, it'd be a little bit better if we can spend some more time later and then something happens.
Yeah.
You know?
How many times has that happened to you? I know it's happened to me a lot.
You know, I had an occasion like that once in which I was supposed to interview Hirschfeld.
I'd love to have met him.
And he was apparently the, he had drawn pictures of Houdini and,
sure,
of course, Copperfield and several others, but he was friends with different people. And what's interesting, too, is that his agent was also an agent for Max Mellini, I think, way back when, or had some sort of a tie with Mellini. Right.
That's another guy I really would have loved to have met, Mellini.
Exactly.
Amazing person.
But I was, so the agent had lined up a time for us to get together and talk, and I was going to record a conversation, and this was well before podcast days or whatever. I just wanted to have this conversation because I was going to write an article for Magic Magazine at the time. So I was recording it and then going to go back and use that as the information for the article I was going to write. Well, what happened was I waited, and the phone didn't ring. And so later that afternoon, I contacted them, and they said, well, you know, Al was here, and we were both waiting for your phone call. We never got it, and after about an hour, he left. And it's like, oh, nice. Man, I misunderstood. I thought, and I said, well, let's schedule for next week. He died within 5 days.
Oh, those are the moments you just
man,
bite your own over those moments, don't you?
Yep. Boy,
sorry if I do swear too much. Do yell, because I know this is your podcast.
Well, that's okay. I've told people before that who have asked if I ever bleep anything out, and I said only when I talk with Simon. Seems
yeah,
like
well, I can be quite colorful, as you know. But I think I've been quite well behaved.
You
so
have
far.
Been. I was going to say, goodness, you seem to be quite tame over there. So,
you know, I'm going to finish it with an absolute litany of swear words.
In some really wild story or something. Well, yes. I know the one thing that everybody's been asking, wanting to know about, then I've heard that you're not planning on moving back to the U.S., that you're staying then with your father or near your father, or what's the latest?
Well the thing is, and it is kind of weird, I would love nothing more than to move back to the U.S. Sure. It's where I feel is my home.
Right.
But right now I'm not in a position to be able to do that. But it's in my future plans are that's where I would love to retire to and to be. Are you still there?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. You went very quiet there. I thought you were just gently weeping into a nappy or something.
Well, I am. I'm sorry that you're not going to be coming over. I'm not going to get to see as much as I did.
That's my long-term aim is to get back there. Obviously, short-term, I've got a nice little apartment here now.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got it decked out, and I'm doing my art. That's what I do for my living these days.
You say you're doing your arts? What does that mean?
Art. I do art, you know.
You mean performing arts? I'm sorry, I was thinking painting
pictures.
Or something. Oh, you are?
No, pictures art, yeah.
What do you use? Your medium?
I do decoupage art.
Interesting. Do you have a particular theme? I mean, is it a magic theme or with cards or something? Or what kind of decoupage?
No. It's some of them very abstract. Some of them are comical. Some of them are pictures of famous people. Some of them are just plain weird, as friends have said. And some of them, as other friends have said, are marginally disturbing. But that's what art is supposed to do. It's supposed to create emotion.
Sure.
So, and I really enjoy that. So I do that and a lot of reading. I'm catching up on all sorts of reading I've missed out on by concentrating so much on magic. So, so I'm reading more classical stuff and arty stuff and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I'm very settled now. After my time's in the loony bins, and don't worry, you can ask me controversial stuff.
Well, the last time we talked, you were in the loony bin because you sounded, I mean, matter of fact, what you said, that you were not feeling well. Your voice didn't sound nearly as strong as, I mean, you sound like the old Simon that I've always known then right now. But the last time.
Well, it's because I've cut out all of the blinking mind-altering, although they tell you they don't, they do feed you all sorts of mind-altering substances, and I don't care if that goes out on your podcast and I get sued for it because I can prove they do. So you know, you get a bit of a twitch on, they give you pills.
Yeah,
they'll tell you they're vitamins and they're not.
Yeah,
you know, the next thing you know, you're waking up, it's 4 years later and you're in a movie called Tron or something.
So whenever that you had then gone over to back to the UK from the United States, I remember Randy Wakeman
let's just say when I came back to the UK, you mean when I was forcibly ejected back to the UK?
Yes, right. That must not have been a very good time of your life.
It was not at all. That was I don't know if we've spoken about this before, but the very first night I was back, they put me at my father's house, which was not the smartest call in the world. We get on better these days, but we certainly didn't in those days. And I was out in the garden with a knife.
With a knife?
Well, I'm doing this interview. Can I? Yes. Holding it to my wrists, and the policeman turned up, and I threw the knife at the policeman.
Wow.
And that was my first inspection of an English loony bin, having been in the American one.
And how did that compare? I've never asked this question before. How did the American loony bin differ from the asylums over in the UK?
Better food. The American one, better food, less freedom. The English one, less psychotic.
Hmm. You mean as far as other people who were there or the way you were treated?
Oh, no. No, the people that were there, the American guys. I used to eat with a guy. Well, he sat opposite me at the same table.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only later that they told me that he had killed his wife and all of his children.
Wow. And so they throw everybody in the same room, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Whether that they're serial killers or whether they just pet their dog the opposite way.
Because there was a serial killer in the American one as well.
Huh.
And the nicest guy. 5'8", 5'9". You know, all serial killers tend to be under height.
Yeah.
5'8", 5'9", skinny. Didn't look like he could break a door handle.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he'd killed 14 people.
Wow. Wow. But you got to wonder also sometimes if people like that are even honest whenever they're saying something. In other words, you know.
Oh, no, I learned this from the staff.
Mm, oh, I see.
You never, if you're in a loony bin, first rule of thumb is never listen to what the loony person tells you.
I would think that's right. I think it'd be like being in prison, that there are no guilty people in prison.
Exactly. Like, everybody's innocent in prison. Everybody's right. Sane in a loony bin.
Right, right.
Anyway, do you want to move on to something more?
I do. I was going to say
slightly amusing.
Because as it happened, of course, after you had left, that White Collar had ended, and that was the end of the production and everything, which was sad. That was a really good series, and it was great seeing you in it and all of that then, too. Is that something that you think that you're going to be doing then in the UK as far as doing any more consulting perhaps with the BBC or something on programs?
Well, actually, not with the BBC, but I have just finished doing a consultancy job here. Lee Hathaway, who I'm sure you know, came to me with the project and he said, I think you can help with this. We need a director and we'd like you to be in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a project called Inside the Magic Circle. And basically, the basis of the story is it's a super secret spy organization have decided the Magic Circle is full of, I don't know, something, whatever it is they think it's full of. You know, they're responsible for the death of this and the explosion of this and whatever, because they're so top secret that they send an agent in to infiltrate the Magic Circle and basically would then go around the Magic Circle, show the museum and bloody, bloody, blah, and some people performing close-ups, some people performing magic. And in the end, they kind of crank onto our secret agent. You still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So this is. I was going to ask if that was going to be a 1-hour show, or is it actually a movie or a series?
Well, we're hoping it's going to be a series. Right now, it's a pilot, but at the end, our spy does this really weird thing, gets up on the roof, and abseils down the side of the Magic Circle, and genuinely abseils down the side of the Magic Circle, and disappears into all this smoke and stuff, and it's. And it's really cool because then he rips this false mask off and it's the president of the Magic Circle, but don't tell anyone I told you that.
Wow. Interesting. And then so
it's a really good show. And if they like it, it'll go serious. If not, it'll just be a DTP, a direct to public DVD.
I had heard just recently, I mean, like last week, that the Magic Castle is going to be, I guess, the subject of a film that Ridley Scott is looking at producing a movie or something in and around the Magic Castle.
He stole my idea, the bastard.
I think that has been an idea everybody's had in the back of their mind at one time or another.
Well, the magic castle has been used in loads of movies, of course, with the great Billy McComb in that horror movie. I've forgotten the name of it, but he was absolutely wonderful in it.
I'm trying to think what the name of that was. I know which one you're talking about. Boy, that was a long time ago. That was, is that the 60s?
No, probably the 70s, late 70s, I think. Okay. Anyway, whatever it was, it was.
Yeah.
And somebody will come onto your podcast reply thing going, you idiots, it's this.
It was such as
and
such, yes.
And then you can call me and tell me what it was, and we'll go, no, blimey.
Yeah, that's right. So this meeting that you guys are at here this evening is every Tuesday night, and then you go to the Circle on Monday night, so it sounds like you're pretty much...
Sometimes. It depends. It depends, because I don't have any transport.
Mm-hmm.
I'm quite dependent on people to help me out and stuff.
Yeah, I was talking with Martin Cox, who had said, I guess, that he picks you up, I think, from time to time, or Scott Penrose.
Yeah, and Scott Penrose has done so, and Mandy Davis has done so and stuff. But, you know, I'm not a person who likes to demand things.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. I don't want people to be put out by doing it. If they can do it, they can do it. If they can't, they can't. And tonight it happens that the Mid-Essex Magic Society, which oddly enough, by the way, I was at the very first meeting of years and years and years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a good bunch of kids and they're a good bunch of lads. And it's fine.
Well, now, I know also that they have a lot of not only clubs in and around London and throughout England, but also a lot of magic conventions. Have you appeared at any of the conventions yet as being one of the performers or lecturers?
No, not yet. Maybe one day. You never know.
I mean, is it something that you're just kind of holding back at this point? You're really not wanting to jump into magic the way it has evolved and... as you were before?
Oh, no, I'm happy to jump on in, straight-jacketed or not. You know, I'd happily do my straight-jacket escape or some card tricks and stuff, you know, because I've already done a couple of lectures and things.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'd happily be able to lecture or do close-up or do even a stand-up spot.
Now, what about coming over?
But, you know, it takes a long time for trust to come back.
I understand that. What about coming back over to the U.S. or, for that matter, over onto the European continent if you're going to be in Germany or someplace? In other words, that if you got booked to do a convention over here or there or wherever, I guess would you travel or do you need to stay close to home?
Absolutely.
Okay.
In a heartbeat, mate.
Okay.
In a heartbeat. Well, I went to Vienna, say, to do the final edit of the Infiltrator show. So, I'm totally happy with doing that.
All right. Well, I'm just mentioning that because I know that there'll be some convention organizers who are out there and might want to have you booked back over for another convention sometime soon.
Well, if I may just add a caveat to that, if you're a convention organizer and you want me over there, Scott knows my number,
mm-hmm.
and it's not this number. It's
right.
My home number, which you have as well, I think.
Yes.
So just call Scott, and he'll quote you an excessive fee, and he'll take his ridiculously low 90% cut.
Of course. And have you got any books or anything that you're kind of thinking about or keeping on the back burner or just some notes you've been keeping? I mean, whenever that book on cheaters had come out, that I thought you had already covered that with some other books you had put out before and some cons.
Well, I've got some notes squirreled away.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say that there's not enough for a book yet, but not to sound pompous or anything, but there's at least four or five. I've got about 10 things, and you need a lot more than that for a book, obviously.
Yeah.
But there's at least four or five that are so sneaky, as Blackadder would say in that beautiful English comedy TV series, that are so sneaky you could pin a tail on them and call them a stoat.
Pin a tail and call them a stoat.
Or a weasel. I don't know.
Or a ferret.
Or a ferret. Or indeed a zebra. But pick your own tailed animal. You could pin a tail on it and call it a man with a dangly piece of anal hair.
Have you been keeping in touch with Randy Wakeman?
I've, from time to time, I haven't, not just recently, but we have spoken a few times. And the great Randino is, as always, the great Randino. And I look forward to seeing him again one of these days, hopefully sooner rather than later. He's one of my best friends on the planet, as you know. And I miss him dearly.
Yeah, he was the one who was kind of keeping me up to date on you, so I had been able to touch base and kind of hear from time to time from him, but I haven't chatted with him in a while, so that's why I thought, well, I'll just go direct to the horse's or zebra's mouth here. And
and also, of course, Randy was very helpful in organizing my help fund.
Yes, yes.
Which got me out of all sorts of monumental problems.
I'm sure you'd like to thank all the people who had donated.
I would indeed, and I shall do so immediately. To anyone who donated to the Save Saimi Fund, whatever your mental condition was at the time, I thank you honestly from the bottom of my heart. And if I ever see you and you tell me you did, whether it be for 10 cents, a dollar, or $100, or whatever it was, I shall hug you, kiss you, and memorably give you the night of your life, especially if you're female.
I remember also that you had a website and that you had asked me to make sure that the website was going to be kept, or at least all the information was on that. And there was a friend of mine and a listener from the Magic Word who had actually contacted me and said, hey, don't worry, I got that covered. So I've got things downloaded. So if in the event that your website had gone down or you lost the domain or whatever.
Oh, that's brilliant.
So that's backed up. We've got a friend who has that taken care of. I don't know if you know Jim Krenz or not.
Oh, of course. Yep. Yeah, well, give him my very best next time you see that mad-bearded fool.
He's a great guy.
He's a great guy. Yeah, yes. He and I have hung out a few times, and I believe got rather wobbly together on a couple of occasions.
But do you have a website anymore, or has that gone away?
No, it's telephone only at the moment, I'm afraid.
Okay. So that's why I was wondering that, the best way for me to get in contact with you or anybody else, I guess, would be then through the phone, kind of.
Yeah,
like
and
that.
I can occasionally piggyback the internet, but I don't have email or anything at the moment.
Mm-hmm. So are you still living in the same apartment that's near where your father lives?
Yeah, in dear old Merlin Place.
Merlin Place. Well, that seems appropriate.
Yeah, how apropos, eh?
Yeah.
The moment I saw the street name, I thought, if I like the apartment, I've got to take this.
Yeah.
and I have a mad cat who lives next door who is great.
What's the cat's name?
The cat is called Scott.
Well, so you think of me frequently, huh?
Exactly. Except that this cat attacks me every time I say hi to it. You know, you go, hi, Scott, how you doing? He goes, wow. Even if you're like 15 feet away, it splays its claws and goes for you.
We used to have a cat that my wife, Kathy, had named Seabrook. And the reason was because that...
It was blind?
It would eat anything and drink anything and carouse with the most sordid lot.
Yes, it's aptly named then.
And anyhow... So it sounds like that things are getting along quite well, and that you're getting a lot better all the time, and sounding great, and getting and keeping in magic and everything with a lot of friends.
Yeah,
about.
Yeah, and I'm doing fine now. I try to get your life back together, and now I'm working towards getting my life back together more.
Yeah, that sounds great, and by doing that, then. Part of that transition sounds like might be getting back into doing more magic conventions and maybe some more books.
That would be great.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, my art keeps me very sane, and chatting with friends helps more than anybody knows. So to chat with you is a delight, a pleasure, and she'll send me to bed tonight with a warm, throbbing glow.
Well, that's. I'm glad I could do something for you.
Yes, even if it's only over the phone.
And it's and across the pond. Over the phone and across the pond.
Exactly, yes.
So have you got any stories?
To the bishop.
Have you got any stories or anything interesting or funny jokes that you've heard or been telling? Again, if there's something that's going to be a little bit more rude, I can always
No, not really. I've just been really working incredibly hard at getting my shit together. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm quite proud of the fact I became a member of Chelmsford Golf Club.
Really? You're playing golf now?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm just a member of the club.
Oh.
So I can go up there and have some of their really good sandwiches.
Okay.
And a couple of pints of beer.
Uh-huh.
But no, I don't play golf. I've got a mankin leg, don't forget. I've got that 2.5 foot of titanium and
My
leg, yeah.
That's right.
Well, I can't forget about it because it keeps me awake most nights.
Really? That's too bad.
Oh, yeah. Well, when the temperature changes, it stretches and bloody, bloody, bloody. The titanium doesn't, but the bolts do. And you wake up and suddenly your knee's facing the wrong way around. And you think, well, that's interesting. It was the other way around a minute ago.
It sounds almost kind of like an arthritis kind of condition.
Yeah, well, my hip is a little arthritic, so I might need a hip replacement. But then they'd have to take the metal rod out the leg to do that. Oh, it's all, you know, actually, let me just warn young magicians out there. As you get older, life is I don't care how much money you've got, your body gives up.
I'm not going with you. You're going to have to go on this rest of ride by yourself. My body's staying back here.
Yeah, well, let's face it, Scott. Your body has it's changed a bit over the years.
Oh, boy, has it.
I remember the young, slim, good-looking Scott that's now turned into a beach blue whale with a wobbly leg.
Yeah, indeed. Yes, I still look at those pictures fondly as well. So I remember that guy way back when.
God, I've got a picture of you and I together, by the way, when we were both good-looking and could pull a lady or two.
Was that the one when fell asleep on the on the couch?
That's the puppy. I believe there may have been some alcohol involved.
May have been, yeah, just a tad, but possibly. So.
Never did a tad.
Yes, yeah. I remember, yeah, walking over to the nearby pub several times with you over there and then back to your place.
Yep.
Or wobbling back, I guess, over to your place. So I remember we'd spend some hours just talking about stuff, and I don't think it was until about the fourth hour we actually did a card trick.
That's right. And the talking was the much more fun bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, do you still keep in touch or hear from Michael Chout or Todd Robbins, any of those guys from Monday Night?
I haven't heard from them for ages.
Mm-hmm.
But on your podcast now, I can say hi to them and do a shout out to them.
Sure.
So it'd be nice to hear from them. But yeah, when I left New York, I seem to have just vanished from the American scene.
Pretty much.
Which is why I'm so glad that, you know, you got in touch with me.
Well, I really wanted to.
So I can say, hi, I am still alive and I'm still okay.
Yes, well, that's the best news because, again, I've noticed that not only have people asked me whenever they see me personally, but also in looking at the analytics that show which podcasts that people are going back and listening to and downloading and looking into the archives, that I had one or two with you, and that still seems to be a frequent one that people go back and listen to.
Oh, wow.
So,
by the way, very big kudos for using a word like analytics.
Well, I haven't started
How very touring of you.
I haven't started drinking a martini yet, so.
Oh, get one immediately.
I think I should, yeah. Maybe have one intravenously so that way it goes straight to it first. You mentioned having a beer or two, so I remember that you used to carry around a chip. So is that something that you are drinking lightly or not at all? Or
lightly.
Okay.
Lightly, yeah. You know, I decided that life is way too short to make it incredibly boring.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, you don't drink, you don't smoke, you don't take drugs, you'll live to be 103. Well, at least it'll feel like you're 103.
Really, you're 27.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, as long as you don't abuse it or go berserk.
Mm-hmm. And so that's the fine line you've learned.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me, I would like to say, I mean, at least I didn't die, but it took me the second worst option to learn that.
Mm-hmm.
But there you go. you know, the lesson, life is full of lessons, and lessons give you life.
Life is full of lessons.
God, that was pretty profound, wasn't
that,
it?
Oh, that was deep. I said
effing. If I'd left the F word out of that, that would have been quotable.
Okay.
Well, it could be if you leave off the "that was effing profound" bit.
Okay. Say it again then.
Oh, I've forgotten what I said now.
I don't know. Well, I can go back and listen. I recorded it.
Yeah, it was good though.
It was.
And most of the best,
moments.
You know, Einstein only said E equals MC squared once, and they said, "What did you say?" And he said, "I don't know. It was something about MCing an E." Maybe it was MCing a square E.
Hopefully somebody jotted that down.
I said it once. Did you write it down? No, we did not write it down, Einstein. Oh, you idiots! Now I have to start all over again, you swines.
You know, another thing that I miss was the segments you used to have on Real Magic with
I used to love doing those. I used to do like 8 of them at a time.
Oh, did you?
I love doing those. Yeah, no, the boys would come over to mine, or we'd meet up at a convention or something, and we'd block out like 2 or 3 hours, and we'd do 8, 9 at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And they liked them because I could just whistle them out really quickly.
Now, they were just thoughts off the top of your mind, basically? Or are they things that you had written down or thought about? Or
my brilliant plan was, I didn't even want to see the subjects before they gave them to me. It was either genius or insanity, but I thought, I just want to do them all off the top of my head.
So for people who haven't seen this, you want to explain what the premise was?
Yeah. Yeah. So they would just turn the camera on and say, talk about famous magicians you met, or talk about favorite tricks, or Jimmy Wibble Wobble Willy from South Dakota says, what's the best way to inject heroin? Or whatever magic question it was. Yeah, so
and then you would kind of take it from there and give Simon's
advice. And then just ramble on for a bit and obviously wander off into all sorts of obscure areas.
Mm-hmm.
And just have some fun with it.
And then also you had
And quite often, by the way, ending up with a completely different answer to the question that was asked anyway. But it didn't seem to matter because somehow the question got answered somewhere along the middle.
Along the way, sure. Yeah, well, there's so many other things that were discussed as part of that too. Now, did you record a lot of those there at the Phantasma Magic Shop in the city, New York City?
Some, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And some were at conventions, you said, I guess, whenever you saw Cosmo?
Yeah, some at conventions with Cosmo, and mm-hmm. There was one famous one we did. It was absolutely snow-covered, and, oh, my God, we were all freezing our ass off.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great. We just had a lot of fun doing them.
Yeah. And you had worked with Phantasma. Golly, I mean, it seemed like there were so many things you were doing during the day and the nighttime. I mean, where you were working with Phantasma, or you were consulting on the White Collar or else, and then the weekend you were doing the Strange and Unusual Hobbies show.
Yeah.
And all that. So you were keeping pretty darn busy over there.
Yeah, that's probably what took me down.
Yeah, so now you are pretty much kind of like Sherlock Holmes in retirement, just kind of beekeeping.
Yeah, well, not so much beekeeping, because I'm actually
the
decoupage,
yeah.
I'm allergic to bees.
Oh, but not to decoupage.
Well, not to bees, to bee stings. What do they call it? Anaphylactic shock thing. Yeah. No,
very
I've got
good.
One of those EpiPen things.
Wow, so actually you could die from it.
Yeah, and I did get stung by a bee once in New York and collapsed, and they had to zip me to hospital because my EpiPen had broken.
Mm, wow.
And that was when I went out and bought 2 EpiPens, so in case one broke, I had the other one.
Yeah, but you have to get a replacement every once in a while because they don't last forever. It seems like every year.
No, you have to replace them once a year.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
But I always had 2 because I'm deathly allergic to bees, and literally the bee stung me, and I was with my girlfriend, thank God, at the time.
Mm-hmm.
She went, oh, you've just got stung, that's weird, let me squeeze it a bit for you. And she squished it a bit, and I just went bonk.
It went over, went out,
and thankfully she knew exactly what had happened.
Yeah. Well, I know when you were working at Fantasma, you had some other tricks and things that you were working and maybe demonstrating behind the counter. And while you've been in the UK, has there been anything?
Well, also, by the way, something that a lot of people might not know is I wrote nearly all of their kits. I wrote all the instructions for their kits.
Mm. Okay.
And came up with a lot of the tricks for the kits.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Roger would come to me with a box of what I would lovingly call crap. And say, I need 150 tricks with this. And I'd have to sit down and work out. There were some, especially in the earlier kits, you know, like the Legends kit was a joy to write because that was just so full of cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then towards, I don't know if it's still, is Fantasma still going?
Yes, they are, yeah.
Okay, well, but towards the end of my little demonic reign there, the props were getting fewer, cheaper, smaller, mm-hmm. and less items in the box, but he still wanted the same number of tricks.
Mm-hmm. Of routines and, for and, the tricks,
and
yeah.
That was when we kind of broke up. And I'm not saying that was a wrong decision, because it was a business decision.
Sure.
But when you look back at some of the early kits, like the Legends kit, the Ultimate kits, and the briefcase one, where it was mm-hmm. a special locked briefcase and things like that, I mean, there were some really brilliant kits there. As a kid, when I got my David Nixon kit that had like three cards, a straw, and a dead ant in it, and instructions for 9,000 tricks, none of which involved any of the props in the box,
mm-hmm.
compared to something like the Legends kit, which I was incredibly proud of, because that was a bloody good kit. I don't know if you've ever seen one, but there's a lot of great magic in there.
I believe I've got the briefcase one.
Right. Well, try and get hold of a Legends magic kit, because I'll tell you, there's magic in there that would fool a professional magician.
Interesting.
And the problem with them was, though, that there was enough. You could pull out, like, maybe, for the Legends one, I think I got maybe 140 good tricks out of all the props.
Mm-hmm.
Out of those, not egotistically, I'd say maybe 70 or so were really good tricks.
Wow.
Maybe 40 or so of which were excellent tricks that I would use. But he wanted 200 plus.
That was
so
a lot of work.
Then you had to kind of start flumping around with mixing props together. And
you know, I think that's kind of like with musicians that back when they would, before CDs, back in album days, that they had to fill out an album for the A side, for the B side, basically. And
exactly.
So they'd put together songs, well, this isn't really great, but.
It's not so good, so we'll use it as a B side.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the A side will go to number one, and that'll flip the B side up the charts a bit.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and but any magic kit person does that, you know, like Marvin's has done it, and all the rest of them, you mm-hmm. know, Murphy's, they all do it.
Well, have you seen anything recently that has kind of flipped your switch, something that's as kind of cool, that is a trick, or maybe something you've seen at one of the magic meetings that people have performed that is new, or maybe a mentalism effect or anything? Or
oddly enough, there was a mentalism guy did something, when was it? About 2 weeks ago. And it was at the local magic club.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wish I could tell you the effect. But I can tell you it was one of those ones that involved reducing anagrams.
Okay, yep, and branching anagram. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it was, but the way it was concealed was so clever. I was really impressed with that. And I think that's the way mentalism's going. It's going from less gimmicky to more super subtlety in word usage.
Well, I think that's true, and I've always said that's why I think there are fewer mentalists than there are magicians, because they tend to use their verbal skills as opposed to, you know, buying a trick and doing it out of the box immediately. They don't have to put any thinking to it, because the trick basically kind of works itself as you kind of shuffle the deck or whatever it has to do. Whereas a mentalist, that they're the wonder words, I guess, so to speak, that it's what you say and how you say it and how you direct the audience.
You know as well as I do that magicians, along with clowns and mimes, are considered the lowest of the low in show business.
Mm-hmm, right.
Why? Because you can buy the act.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why magicians are the lowest of all, because you can't buy comedy talent. You can't buy a voice to sing. You can't buy acting talent, however many acting lessons you get.
Mm-hmm.
You can't buy pole balancing. You got to practice all that shit. But anybody can go into a high street store and buy a magic kit. And if that sounds controversial, I'm sorry, but it's true. And that's why there are so many crap magicians around.
You're actually right. I remember talking so many years ago with my friend Pat Hazel, who was a magician and a juggler. And he was always talking about how that he would be more impressed with jugglers because they actually have to put time into practice. You just can't pick up some clubs and start throwing them accurately and catching them, whereas you can pick up a trick, you know, basically, and be doing it in tonight's show.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I always used to, my favorite acts on magic shows were nearly always the jugglers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're nearly always the ones that go down the best on a magic show.
Right, right.
And the only one that was different was a Blackpool one said, damn it, I can't remember his name, you'll know it. It's the guy that does the human statue act. From him, it's like
Is that the French guy that it's all white, kind of like a mime in a way that
and he very slowly comes to life.
Yes,
and stuff and that to me is the and owl something was it or something like that.
It'll come to me, but I know who you're talking about. That was a fantastic act, and you're wondering, where his head is. I mean, then what?
Arguably the greatest magic act I have ever seen. With one exception.
And who's that?
Fred Capps.
Is he your favorite magician?
I wouldn't say he's my favorite magician. I'd say he was... If you said to me, pick the most perfect magician you'd ever see, he would be one of two, I'd say.
And? The other
Tommy
person?
Wonder.
Tommy, okay. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I'd have to fling in Fred Robinson.
Yeah.
But Fred was really just a putzer. He just liked putzing around on the table, so he wouldn't mind being left out of that thing. But Tommy Wonder was just... And Fred Capps. I mean, Fred Capps was so bloody perfect.
Mm-hmm. In everything.
You know, people
close
go
up
like,
stage,
oh, look at Lance Burton. Look at Siegfried. Look at these guys that... God almighty, Fred Capps, that lovely little cheeky grin he had and the appearing. To me, that was the perfect act.
And had you met him personally or just had seen
him? Yeah, I met him once.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, twice, I think, maybe. But yeah, very nice guy. I mean, obviously gay because everybody knows that now. But he was very nice to me, very genuine. I showed him a couple of tricks, and he said, oh, that's very good. It's just, you might want to try this, you might want to try this. And, of course, improved everything with every word he said.
Yeah.
He obviously knew so much about so much. But the thing, as you said, was he was so good at stage and so good at close-up.
Yeah, I think the only guy close to him today would be Johnny Thompson.
Oh, Johnny is a god.
Mm-hmm.
So you asked me who the best magician was. You didn't ask me who a god was. Okay, just backtrack, Scott. Ask me who do you think is the god of magic.
Who would you think would be the god of magic?
There's only one. It's JT, Johnny Thompson.
So you're a monotheist.
Johnny Thompson is possibly the greatest magician in the history of magic, with the possible exception of Merlin.
Wow. Okay.
I think Johnny is... Well, I'll give you a clue. Whenever I had a problem with a trick, I'd phone up JT.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say, sorry to disturb you, mate. Well, actually, Pam would normally answer the phone. I'd say, can I talk to JT? And she'd say, problem? I'd say, yeah. She'd go, oh, he's got another bloody problem, Johnny. I'll pour you a scotch. If you come on the phone, I say, Johnny, I've got this situation with this trick where this card is there, that card is there, and there's a coin there. How do I change that to that? And he'd go, Jesus, do you read anything? And he'd give me like 15 books with page, by the page numbers, tell me where to look. And in several cases, told me which paragraph on the page where to look. I don't think there's ever been a more knowledgeable magician ever.
Right. And he's still so sharp and, as you say, just knowledgeable and just seems to be a compendium of books and knowledge.
And he is an incredibly nice guy if he doesn't like you.
To everybody.
Yeah, if he doesn't like you, he can be a bit of a bugger. But that's okay because he's a special person. And he is, I like to think of him as a dear friend, and he's another one. If you've got his email, please give him my contact information, because I just think of him not so much as an incredibly knowledgeable magician and very clever guy, but just as an extremely cool friend.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be seeing him again this summer. He will be the guest of honor at the IBM convention in San Antonio over the 4th of July.
Well, give him a pinch on the cheek and say, "Sight me level says hello. I'm still alive, you old git, and I'm coming for you."
Okay. Well, listen, we need to...
And by the way, pinch Pam on the ass and say, "He's coming for you, too."
She'll know where that's coming from.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have to get together and talk again later. I'm going to try to wrap this up over here. So,
okay, sir.
I appreciate so much your time. And
it's my absolute pleasure. And hi to all my American buddies and all your podcast buddies around the universe, I suppose, these days.
Quite a few people. Yeah, I've had, thankfully, a few people who have logged on and been continuing to listen, and they're going to be downloading this one, I'm sure, just to hear how you're doing. And so good to hear your voice, and that so strong and too there, Simi.
Yeah, and you too, my friend. It's a delight and a pleasure. And say to all your listeners, keep listening to Scott's podcasts, because you might hear somebody actually more interesting than me soon. I doubt it, but you might.
But you might. Very good. Thanks again, buddy. We'll see you.
Hey, thanks, Scott. Lovely to hear from you, my friend.
Okay,
and,
cheers.
And bye to all the podcasters.
Okay, bye-bye.
Ciao.
Wow, that was really great getting to hear from Simon. He sounded so good also, and I hope you guys are as anxious for him to get back into magic and seeing him again, perhaps over here in the States, or getting more involved over in the UK and perhaps in the European continent and Asia and elsewhere, so he can start spreading his magic and his fun and his comedy with others, perhaps some of you guys who haven't ever seen or heard him, who might be some new listeners. But golly, most everybody knows Simon Lovell, and what a great guy, and we wish him the best and hope that he gets everything all straightened out and everything works out and we see him again here real soon. And now it's time for our trick reviews of the week. We're going to be reviewing four different things. Well, I should say two are similar and the others are different. In particular, one is going to be a DVD, two are actual props that you can order, and the last one is a PDF that you'll be able to download. So let's first talk about the DVD. 6 minutes of killer comedy and eye-popping magic by Matt Foree, or it could be Four, F-O-R-E, however. Anyhow, Matt provides us with about 58 minutes here of complete instructions for a 6-minute routine that he shows the performance of how he can work an audience in order to maximize the effect of nothing more than just a ring and a rope and a pair of scissors. He goes into a lot of detail as to how to perform this and the lines that he uses, and also it includes the audience reactions. I think it's important how you see that he gets the reaction he does from the audience, because a lot of times the magicians are pretty jaded as to what we see and what we're looking for. Some might consider this as being hack magic or very introductory, and I would certainly say this is a DVD for the beginner. If you're looking to have some sort of a good basics and a good routine that you can learn fairly easily, this would be it. You just need a ring and a rope and, again, a pair of scissors. It's fairly straightforward and fairly simple, and nothing more than that. There's nothing new necessarily that's introduced here. In fact, he goes into detail as to who he has to credit for each of these things and for the ropes and the cut and destroyed rope routine and the ring and rope routines and moves that he uses, etc. So, again, this is a good routine that if you're looking to get started in magic, very straightforward, very easy, a lot of basic lines. This is kind of how you get started and move on then to another level. So I would say, being at the level I am, I wasn't excited about this particularly, and nothing new here for the person who is an intermediate to advanced. But if this is one of your first DVDs, it could be a good way of getting involved with learning a routine here. And he includes all of the lines, which if you've seen any other magicians, they probably use those at one point or another also. Again, a lot of stock lines are used in this, but he does show how that he gets a lot of reaction from his lay audiences. You be the judge. I wasn't real wild about it, from my opinion, but this might be for you if you're a beginner. Again, that's 6 minutes of killer comedy and eye-popping magic by Matt Foray. Matt Foray or Matt Four? Next up are a couple of versions of the classic lasso card trick. This is the effect in which basically you have a card selected and put into a paper bag, shake it up, and then you dip a rope into the bag as if you're fishing for the card, and when you pull it back out, the card is then tied to the rope. The couple of versions that we're talking about here this week, one is called Fisher's Dream by Iñaki Zabaleta. Well, I hope I got that right. Iñaki Zabaleta. And this comes from Vernet Magic. That's pronounced properly Vernet, not Vernet. And so this is one, I like the routine. This, again, is the classic one with the rope and using the right kind of magnet that you need. It comes complete with the knot and the magnet and the rope and everything, as well as the sack. The sack is not gimmicked. The only thing is just with the rope that comes with it. And it is a well-made prop, certainly, and the routining and the handling of that is explained not only in the written directions, but there is a link to the online instructions where you can watch the performance and you can get some of the more details and the handling of the routine. So this way you can understand it then a little bit better. And it is very well done. What I like about this version is that it is a signed card. So you put the signed card actually in the bag, basically, to shake it up. And when you dip the rope in there, you pull it back out and you show it has now caught the signed card. So it's not just a selected card. I think that's a little bit of an addition that I had not seen before, which I like. And the next version is called Fishing by Under Magic. I picked this up actually when I was at FISM this last year, and there weren't many things that I picked up when I was there. This was again in 2015 in Rimini, Italy, and there were hundreds of dealers there, but one of the first things I purchased and I really liked a lot was called Fishing. And the version of this one is in which you're actually using earbuds, like from your iPhone or whatever, kind of earbuds that you would normally use. And you have a card selected and you would dip into your backpack or your briefcase or whatever it is, after you'd have a card selected, of course, and then it comes back out and the card is actually tied around your cord of your earbuds. Pretty cool, very topical, something that's current, really well made. I like it a lot. It defies inspection. Well, I can't say it defies inspection, but I would say certainly that it is very well made. And it goes on to show about some other ideas, that it doesn't have to be just cards that you're going to be dipping in to pick up. You can pick up other kinds of things, like he suggests a pen, a Sharpie, or whatever kind of a thing. Basically, whatever that the magnet is going to be strong enough to hold, you can have this wrapped around. And again, it is a very well-made prop and well worth the money. And the first one is called Fisher's Dream, and the second one is called Fishing. Our final trick to be reviewed this week is called Free Wallet by Pablo Gamira. This is a PDF download, actually, of his trick in which that he explains how to go about getting a free wallet. He talked about how that as he was getting involved with magic and mentalism, that he was needing to watch his funds, and so he wasn't going to be spending too much money, and found out how to procure a free wallet. And he explains how that you can get one then, too. And beyond that, then how to gimmick that wallet, so this way that it can accomplish some of the things he explains. This is a 24-page PDF, but after you take out some of the blank pages and the cover page and everything, it comes down to about 18 pages, and it has four different routines or ideas that are fleshed out in there that have to do with some playing cards and bills and other kinds of things that you can do with this wallet. Of course, this just kind of is a jumping off point. If you already do a card and wallet, or you have any other kind of a wallet that you have used, you may not necessarily need to get this. But if you're getting started in magic and you kind of have just a limited amount of income, this is a good idea on how that you can get a wallet and then you can do something with it. I would say really that the value of this download for the PDF is basically the secret on acquiring the free wallet. So I'm not going to tell you what it is or how to get it here, because that's what you're paying for when you download this PDF. And he explains where to go and where to find it, and there you go. And for the beginner or someone on a limited income, it's a good idea. Would I have thought of this? Probably so, had I sought this out some time ago. But he's already done the work for you and found one. So there you go. Fire Wallet by Pablo Amira. All these and other fine tricks from Murphy's Magic Supplies are available from your favorite magic dealer, either your brick-and-mortar shop or online. Of course, I would encourage you to take a look over here in the Magic Store here at themagicwordpodcast.com, where you can help support us with your purchases. Well, thank you guys for being so patient here to the end of the podcast to find out about the contest that we are offering this week. Actually, this is a book called Framework by Tom Frame. That is the newest book that has been published by H&R Magic Books, and we are proud to be able to offer two of these available to, I should say, one to each of two lucky listeners who will go to the website at themagicwordpodcast.com. There you will see a place where you can register to enter the contest to perhaps win one of these free books. And by doing so, that we will then be sending your email on to H&R Magic Books, so you can find out then also through their newsletters about upcoming books and sales and whatever that they have then as well. So be aware that we are going to be passing on your email addresses to them as well. So if you like books, and I think you should, because, you know, the best advice was given to me by Roger Clouse so many years ago, in which he said, your best investments are in books. And certainly, I still believe that to be the case. Anyhow, the book is called Framework by Tom Frame. And if you go to the website and you register there and you win, we will send that free of charge if you are living within the U.S. If you are outside the U.S., then we'll have to add foreign shipping. So we'll contact you to let you know how much the shipping is going to be, and then we'll pay for that. The domestic shipping is not being charged to you, but is being absorbed by the Magic Word, thanks to the listeners who have supported the Magic Word with their financial donations. So this is part of some of the expenses that we incur for producing this podcast, and hope that you guys will enjoy this as well. So again, free domestic postage for the winners of the books domestically, and then we'll be charging for the foreign shipping, and we'll let you know about that. Anyhow, I think you got the idea. Sign up and good luck. So until next time, stay well, get booked, and as Simon says, keep listening. Perhaps you might hear someone more interesting. But I doubt it. This is Scotty out.